This week's on Parshas Kisisa, and what I wanted to do is actually to go back to Parshas Mishpatim and something we mentioned when we were learning that Parsha, and then to see how it connects to what happens in this week's Parsha. So if you recall, we were discussing Mishpatim. I just noted the fact that as Moshe was about to ascend Har Sinai, a number of the people that were with him at the same time as the war with Amalek with him as well at that moment, and we pointed out a lot of the similarities between the two incidents. Both both occurred with Moshe ascending a mountain. At both times, Aaron and Hur were very much involved in supporting and helping out, but in different contexts we saw. And in addition, Yoshua plays a role in both stories. In the story of Amalek, he's the one who Moshe sends out to fight and to lead the Jewish people in battle, while Aaron and Hur support Moshe's hands. And in the story of Matan Torah, the end of Mishpatim, there, as Moshe is about to ascend the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, he tells Aaron and Hur to go back and to remain with the people. And it's Yoshua who goes with Moshe towards the mountain. The pasuk says, "Vayaka Moshe, vayoshua misharso." Moshe gets up along with his attendant Yoshua. "Vayal Moshe el Harlokim," and Moshe ascended the mountain. Where is Yoshua? So we pointed out then. Rashi says he's not even sure exactly why Yoshua is mentioned here. Says that that lo yadati mativo shel Yoshua kan. What exactly is Yoshua doing here? Omer ani, and I say shaya hatamin malava, that the student is supposed to escort the teacher ad makom hagbalas tchumei ahar shein rishay leach mishamahala. And Yoshua, of course, did not go up the mountain. He's not able to go up. Only Moshe, but he stayed at the foot of the mountain. And says Rashi continues. Vayal Moshe, when it says that Moshe went up levado, Rashi says he went by himself. But Yoshua, what about Yoshua? Not a solo. Yoshua pitched his tent. He pitched his tent. And he remained there all 40 days. How does Rashi know that he remained there all 40 days? So he's got an outside from our Parsha of Kisisa. Our Parsha of Kisisa, of course, records the horrific and the terrible incident, the great failure of the Chet HaEgel, the sin in golden calf. And so continues the Rashi, Kematzinu, we see Kishiyar and Moshe, that when Moshe went down the mountain, when he descended the mountain after hearing what was happening from God about the sin of the golden calf, Yoshua's call on Bereo, right? Yoshua says to Moshe, "I hear noise coming from the camp." Lamanu, so we learn Shlohaya Yoshua Imam. So we clearly see from here that Yoshua was not with the rest of the camp. In other words, I guess what I want to focus on now is that it seems that Yoshua spent the entire 40 days separate from the rest of the camp. And it's unclear exactly how far he went, was away from the camp, but certainly he was far enough away, as we'll see in a moment, that he did not know what was going on in the camp regarding the worship of the golden calf. The entire time he's patiently waiting at the foot of the mountain, waiting for Moshe. So what I want to do is to talk about a very brief interaction that the Torah describes between Moshe and Yoshua when Moshe first ascended the mountain, again after being told by Hashem what was happening regarding the Chet HaEgel. And so this picks up in Parshas Kisisa. It's in Perek Lamed Beis, where the story unfolds. And Moshe's on the mountain. Again, he's having this incredible encounter with God. And the people down below, the whole story with the golden calf. And how does Moshe find out what's happening? God tells him directly on the mountain. By Daber Hashem El Moshe, this is in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Zion. God says to Moshe, "Lech, raid, go, go down, like, leave, go and go now, raid and go down. You have to leave here right away. Why? This nation that you brought out of Egypt, they've done shiches. They've engaged in some type of destructive behavior. They quickly stray, turn aside from the path that I instructed them. A few days ago, I told them to keep the Torah. They said, Nasha v'nishma. I gave the Ten Commandments. Everything seemed great. And it seems like almost overnight, in a couple of days, everything has turned flipped upside down. And now God tells them directly what is happening. They've made this golden image, this eagle, this golden calf. They're bowing down to it, and they're sacrificing to it. And not only that, and they're saying, "Elo kecha Yisrael shel alucha meretzayim." This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. And again, we've talked about in the past exactly what that means, what did that represent, what exactly what they're saying. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, and God now continues. He like he spoke, and now he's like speaking again. Maybe he took like a deep breath. Now God has more to say to Moshe. I see this nation, Ki'am Kshe'orafu, famous line, they are a stiff-necked people. The Atah, and now, Hanichali, allow me, and I might allow my anger to flare against them. Bachalem, and I will destroy them. I'll make you your own great nation. Right? So again, this is all happening on top of the mountain. God and Moshe alone, again, Yeshua is at the foot. He apparently has no idea what's happening. But God has told Moshe what is occurring in the camp, and now he tells Moshe he's going to destroy the nation people, and I'm going to make you, Moshe, your own separate people. And it's at this point that Moshe immediately interjects, he intervenes, he comes to the rescue, and this is the next few psukim, or the psukim we read at the beginning of every fast day. At the afternoon, we always at Mincha, we read this reading. Vayechal Moshe, Pnei Hashem Elokav, he begins to pray to speak to God. Vayomer, and he says, how can you do this, God? You took them out of Egypt. Remember what you did. What will the Egyptians say? Remember the covenant that you made with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You promised them, spoke to them. You said you'll increase their children. They'll be like the stars of the heaven. The Chol Eretz Hazos, in this entire land, Asher Amarti, Atein Lazeh, I will give to. So, what are you doing, God? How can you do this? How can you do this? It's remarkable that Moshe, stands up for the people at this moment and what he says. And Hashem, Vayinochem Hashem Ara, God relents. Asher Dibir L'Asos Amo, he was planning to destroy them. God said, okay, I won't do that. That all occurs on the top of the mountain. Then, Vayifen Vayir Moshe Minahar, Moshe now begins to descend the mountain, and he still has the Luchos. Right? The tablets, he still has the tablets with him. Got the two tablets. Velochos Maaseh Elokim, just if you forgot what they are, they were engraved by God. They're Michtav Elokimhu, Charus Aluchos. And he's coming down the mountain. He's coming down, he's descending the mountain. And all of a sudden, who does he encounter as he probably gets to the base, the foot of the mountain? None other than Yehoshua. The two psukim. Vayishma, again, he hasn't broken the tablets yet. People often have this vision of Moshe, like he's halfway down the mountain, he breaks the tablets. It's not how the Torah describes it. He seems like again, the camp is nowhere near the mountain. It's far off in the distance. He comes down the mountain, and now he encounters Yehoshua. So Yehoshua realizes something is up. Something is amiss. How do we know that Yehoshua recognizes? But he doesn't know what's happening. But how do we know that he knows that something is happening? Because immediately Yehoshua speaks. Yehoshua's kol amrei-o. He hears the voice of the nation Bereo, and there's like this. Oh, there's this. It's hard to translate that word Bereo, but there's a lot of noise and loud the noise that is occurring. And like Reo, like from Truah, like even like a shofar, like some sort of horns that are going off. But Yomer El Moshe, and he says to Moshe, "Kol milchama b'machaneh." I hear the sound of a war. My goodness, what's going on? Not that long ago, the Jews were attacked with Amalek. Now they're being attacked again. It seems like there's some sort of milchama. That's what it sounds like. Moshe then says, "Vayomer," we assume Moshe's now responds, "In kol anos gvura." Now I don't hear the sound of victors. Then kol anos chalasha. I don't hear the sound of those being defeated, the weak ones. It doesn't seem like it's a war, because if there's a war, there should have been two sounds. The sound of the ones, who seem to have the upper hand, and the ones who are in trouble. I don't hear two different sounds. Rather, kol anot anochi shomea. Rather, I hear the sound of anot. And what is anot? Again, hard to translate, but it's some sort of merrymaking that's going on. Some sort of jovial sound. And that's the end of the conversation between the two of them. Again, Moshe has not yet broken the tablets. So what exactly is happening here? So if you look at that in the Ramban cites Chazal. Chazal and the Medrash, as well as the Yerushalmi, pick up on this short little brief account of this brief conversation. And the Ramban suggests, Avatam ki Moshe ab b'chachma makir niguv hakolot v'amar ki kohanot hu anishma ilav. Right, Moshe clearly here was pointing out to Yoshua that you have to listen very carefully to the voices, to the sound, right? To pay attention. And that's what he said. If there's a war, you would have heard two sounds. You're not hearing got two sounds. And now the Medrash picks up, and the Medrash says, Ramban quotes, "V'chein Amar Ba'agada, Rabbeinu Moshe, Misha Asa Linhog Shara Yisrael Ina Mevchim Min Kol Lekol." Moshe here was somewhat rebuking Yoshua. We suggested when we gave the Shir of Mishpatim that why is Yoshua first, being sent off fight the battle against Amalek? Why is he now joining Moshe at the foot of the mountain initially before Moshe ascended for the 40 days? Is that Moshe already at this stage was training Yoshua, preparing Yoshua to be the future leader. And with Amalek, he had to learn how to wage war, how to be proactive and go out and fight and lead the people. And here it was the more spiritual component of the leadership. So he's training Yoshua to be a leader. But now he says, Yoshua, you're the words of the Medrash is that Misha also linhog shra you saw you the one who is destined to lead the myriads of the Jewish people to lead the Jewish people ain't machim bin kol kol. You have to be able to discern and understand voices, because when people come to you, and any parent knows this, when a child says something, you always have to read in between the lines. What are they really saying, right? And what's the real issue, right? Very often people like we'll say something, but it's not really, that's not the real thing. You have to really uncover the layers. I always share the story of the one time someone came to me with like a question. It was a wife about her husband, and she was asking me a halachic question, but I could tell it was like a much deeper question. It wasn't like a strictly halachic question. It was more about she was concerned about her marriage, and like sometimes you have to figure out what exactly is the person saying. And so that's what Moshe was telling Yoshua. You're going to be this future leader. You're going to have to be able to understand, differentiate between different voices, and understand, when you hear things, what is it really saying? What's the real communication that's going on here? You think it's a war? It can't be a war. Just listen more carefully, right? There's only one sound. It's not two sounds. And the Ramban concludes, and he says at this juncture, at this stage, Moshe Did Yeshua know what was happening? Moshe obviously didn't know, because God told him what was happening. Did Moshe tell Yeshua that the people are worshiping a golden calf? So Ramban suggests, you see from here, that Moshe did not share that information with Yeshua. Why not? In his with much sensitivity, he didn't share it. Vanav Vaso Hagdola, with great sensitivity. Ki lo ratza v'saper b'gdusan shel Yisrael. He didn't want to share with Yoshua the disgrace of the Jewish people. He could have just said, they're worshiping a golden calf, but he didn't say that. He said, I hear the voice of merrymaking, because he wanted to sort of hint to Yoshua what was happening without directly informing on the people. So it's very interesting, right? About Moshe, even in this moment, obviously, of great anger and rage and how upset and disappointed he was, he didn't speak Lashon Hara about the Jewish people. Rather, he just gently chastised Yeshua to be able to have a better, handle, hear things, you see things, to be able to peel away and figure out what's happening. That's how the Ramban understands this entire episode. The Malbim disagrees with a little of this, and the Malbim suggests Yeshlomar Moshe Higid Yeshua. He says, "No, Moshe did tell Yeshua what was going on. How could he not? How could he not share with the disappointment and the what he'd been told by God? And he did. He of course he must have told Yeshua what was happening." He gave Yeshua a Hashem. He told him what God had told him on top of the mountain. But what Yeshua hears the Kol Teruah, right? The language that the Torah says is that he hears the Kol Am Bireo. There's some kind of Teruah. There's some kind of horn that he hears. And normally that's the sound of back in ancient times of war, of fighting. And sometimes it hints, it tells us that there's a war going on. So Amar Kol, he says there must be a war. And it can't be that there's this merrymaking, they're jovial, they're doing all kind of. No, maybe there's a war happening. Here it's Yeshua from Malbim's approach, right? Who's trying to be Melametz Chus, who's trying to suggest that the Jewish people, it's not as bad as you think. Or maybe you misunderstood, and maybe they're not doing something bad. Maybe just God forbid, there's some war going on. Or he say another possibility. The Malbim says that yeah, maybe there is this worship of the golden calf going on, but I hear the sound of Chua. Maybe there's some people, other Jews, that are trying to stop it. Maybe there's a civil war going on. Maybe there's a whole group that's trying to put it to an end to what's happening. And hopefully, there's a strong group that's trying to stand up for what's right. Vayomer Moshe, so what does Moshe respond? If there was really a war going on, if there was a group of Jews who were trying to stop it, what would you hear? Not one sound, you would hear two sounds. You'd hear the sound of the victors and the sound of the ones who are being defeated. The only thing you're hearing is the jovial sound, is this tone of frivolity, of merrymaking. That's the only thing that you are hearing. So what's interesting is that here Yeshua is trying to be Melametz Chus. He's trying to say, well, no, maybe there's a that maybe some there's a group of Jews that are confronting these worshipers, and Moshe is saying, listen, it's always good to be down the Kaskos to judge favorably. But you also sometimes have to see reality or understand reality, and you get yourselves into trouble sometimes when you always want to look at the positive. Sometimes you gotta deal with what's actually happening on the ground. You can be hopeful for certain things, but you also have to be and deal with what's actually happening. So it's just interesting. You have these very two different perspectives between the Ramban and the Malbim. Number one, did Moshe share the information with Yehoshua? And number two, what is the criticism of Yeshua? Is it like the Chazal say, the Ramban says, he just doesn't understand the different sounds. He's got to be able to better tune in to what people are saying. Or he's trying to be Melametz Chus. He's trying to find something positive, but there's nothing positive here to find. And you have to be honest sometimes in terms of what exactly is happening. I just want to conclude with a third possibility. This is like I thought about many years ago, and it happened. I think I was still a student at Yeshiva University when I thought of this idea, and that is, it was right after, unfortunately today it's so common, we don't, it's terrible that it happens all the time. You have these school shootings. I remember like 25 years ago, maybe it was more, there was a school shooting somewhere in the South or something, and a couple, it was a tragic school shooting, and remember there used to be, I think, Newsweek magazine? I think it was either Newsweek or Time, or maybe it was US News. I forget. I was reading an article in one of them, and it was talking about the parents of the shooter. And as the father was, it was interviewed, and he said, he was at work when it happened. Like, he had a radio on, and the news came on, news flash. And his first thing, hear about the shooting at the school where his son attended. He's thinking, oh my, my goodness, my child is there. Is he safe? He didn't know that his son was the perpetrator at this moment. And he's getting ready to go to the school to see what's going on. Also, the phone rings, and it's a kind of asking about the police. Someone called, and he finds out that it's his, it's his own son who was the perpetrator, and so he describes what was going through his mind, what happened, and he had to go across town to pick up his wife, and he describes as that his him and his wife were driving. I guess at that point, I don't know if it was the police station, wherever it was, where the son was, or wherever they were going. He said there was total silence in the car. Like, they had to deal with this horrific reality of their son had done this terrible, crime, and he said, like, there's a silence in the car, and he said, though, that silence gave him strength. Like, his wife's presence of just being there, helped the two of them, and he there for his wife, that they would somehow be able to manage this. Somehow they would be able to, get through this, and as awful as it was. So I thought about that maybe, this encounter with Moshe and Yoshua. And I start off by saying it's unclear how far was the base of Har Sinai from the rest of the Jewish camp. It must have been quite a distance, because Yoshua had no idea what was going on. So they must have been far. Again, all he could hear was noises, but he didn't know. So it must have been. And as Moshe descends the mountain and he encounters Yoshua again, he hasn't broken the luchos yet. That's going to happen next, when he actually comes close to the camp. That's when the Torah tells us next that Vayihi, next pasuk is Kasher Karav El Machaneh, when he came close to the, he finally reached the camp. Maybe it was a half a mile away. Who knows how far away he was? Vayaris Egel. Then Moshe sees the Egel. At that point, again, he's not on the mountain, he's off the mountain now. He now sees the eagle, the calf, Mokolos, all the dancing. Vayicharef Moshe gets extremely angry, and that's when he breaks the luchos. So what did Moshe and Yehoshua say to each other for that half-mile walk? Yeah, they have this two-minute conversation, less than 2 minutes, a 30-second conversation. Yehoshua says something, one pasuk, Moshe responds another pasuk. Well, they must have been walking for another 10 minutes. So what did they say for those 10 minutes? So perhaps they said nothing. Now, perhaps they just walked together at that moment. And that Moshe, again, whether Yoshua knew or not, whether he was told, like the Malbim says, he wasn't, Yoshua's presence alone perhaps gave Moshe the comfort and the strength and capacity to be able to respond how he had to respond. Did Moshe decide at that moment he was going to break the luchos? Was he thinking about it along the walk? Was it only once he actually saw the eagle that he responded? Unclear. It's unclear. But perhaps it was, again, Yoshua standing side by side with Moshe in silence. The notion, the Navi says, that Imo Anochi Batzara, that I'm with you in your time of distress. That just that notion of, God being with us, and having a friend, having someone of support, spouse, to be there, with someone during moments of great pain, sometimes that's the greatest strength you can give. It's not necessarily what you say, it's like something there's nothing to say. That's like a Shiva, right? You go to Shiva, you're not supposed to talk in a Shiva. You're supposed to wait for the mourner to begin the conversation. Otherwise, you just sit there. Just your presence alone, just showing up. Is often the greatest comfort, that you're thinking of me, that you're with me during this most difficult and painful time. And then we know right now with our fellow Jews, brothers and sisters in Israel, the idea of just the solidarity and the idea of thinking of you, that we haven't forgotten about you, that even as time goes on and progresses, that we're still writing, we're still sending letters, we're still making phone calls, and we're still advocating, we're doing all these things, right? That you can't say solve things. But the fact that I'm thinking of you, that I haven't forgotten you, that I'm with you, so that can give that can strengthen one another, right? That can allow us to be able to confront and deal with the challenges that lie before us. And perhaps that's one of the messages that the Torah itself is silent. The Torah itself gives us brief little encounter. It's very interesting to see what that conversation was between Moshe and Yoshua. Perhaps mostly it was that walk that they walked together quietly. That gave Moshe the ability to be able to respond accordingly, to be able to begin the process of getting the Jewish people ultimately back on track. Okay, wishing everyone a very wonderful Shabbos.